Okay, good morning. Last time we skipped, we went from the story of the brachot, of the blessings of Yaakov and Esav, to the story of the marriage of Rachel and Leah, because in terms of the concept, it was connected to each other, and I wanted to show the whole picture. So today we go backwards to the beginning of Parashat Vayetze, and I want to do the famous dream of Yaakov. And then we'll go back by order to wherever we are. So, as we know, Yaakov had to flee for his life because of the anger of Esav. After Yaakov got the blessings that originally were intended for Esav, and he is on the way out. What is a major change in the life of Yaakov, not only because of the fact that he leaves his parents' home, that he leaves the Eretz Israel, the land of Israel, but also because his life there will be very, very different than what it was in till this point, because he undertook the job of Esav as well. What means that from now on, he won't be anymore in the tent all day long, but he'll have to go to work and still maintain his level as Yaakov, especially in the environment of Lavan and the people there who were idol worshippers, Lavan who was a deceiver, and so on and so on. So it's a major, major change in his life. And one way to explain the Chalom, the famous dream that Hashem revealed himself to him and promised him to protect him and so on, is because of this. As we see, it's written, Hashem says, let's start maybe from the beginning. Vayetze Yaakov mi-Be'er Sheva vayelech Haran. Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva and he goes to Haran. And he comes to the place, what is the place of the Beis HaMikdosh, and he sleeps there because sun set, and Rashi tells us, before it's time. Hashem made him sleep in this place because he wanted him to have this dream in this holy place. And he took from the stones of the place, put it beneath his head, and he lay down there. And then he had this unbelievable dream of the sulam, the ladder, that was standing his legs on the ground but reaching heaven, and angels are going up and down on it. And Hashem stands on him, and he says, I am Hashem, the God of your fathers, I'll give you the land. And then he tells him, I am promising you that I'll be with you. V'hinei anochi imach, I'll be with you. Ushmarticha bechol asher telech, I'll protect you wherever you go. V'ashivoticha el ha'adamah hazot, and I'll bring you back to this land. Meaning, it's not forever that you are going to be in exile. V'ki lo ezovcha, and I won't let go of you. I'll be with you till I'll fulfill all that I promised you. So it's a promise to protect Yaakov at a moment where he really feels that he needs protection very, very badly, because he's facing a very major change. Along those lines, Rashi also explains the dream. Obviously, the dream is a message, right? It's an analogy to an idea. And on the simple level, what is not so simple also, but on the simple level, as Rashi always explains the Chumash, on the Pshat level, Rashi explains the dream and the angels that go up and down as a change in the angels that go with Yaakov. If you pay attention, it's very interesting. It's written that he saw a ladder and he saw angels going up and going down. We would anticipate the order to be the opposite. Angels are up there, so first they go down, then they go up, right? Why is it they go up and they go down? Says Rashi, that the angels that accompanied Yaakov while he was in Eretz Israel, in the land of Israel, went up, and now he gets new angels, those that will accompany him while he is outside of the land of Israel. And we find later on, when he comes back, again, a change of guards, right? Those of Chutz La'aretz, of outside of the land of Israel, go up, and he gets back the old ones, those who belong to the land of Israel. Now, what does it mean? Why do they have to be different angels? Because the challenges, the divine providence differs from the land of Israel than from what's happening outside of the land of Israel. And being the, and the exchange of angels indicates that it will be different outside of the land of Israel. It's exile. Hashem will be hidden. He'll face many challenges. And the dream promises him that even though he'll face many, many challenges and life will be more difficult, Hashem will be with him, he'll protect him, and he'll come back. That's the simple interpretation of the dream according to Rashi. But there are endless, endless other interpretations. And those interpretations are given room in the language of the psukim, what the Torah always does, right? When the Torah writes things in a particular way, it's in order to direct us to certain interpretations, right? To look deeper via the questions that come up from the language, we are directed to explore more, find answers, and go deeper, right? So let's go back to the dream and see where are the difficulties, and then we'll see how it is interpreted in a few ways by a few commentaries. So, Vaya Chalom, he had a dream. And what was the dream? Vehine, and behold. Whenever we say, and behold, it's a matter of a surprise, a little bit, right? And behold, I didn't expect it, and here it is. So we have to see what's the special thing here. And let's see what the details are. Sulam mutzav arza, a ladder is standing on the ground, verosho, and its head, its top, reaches heavens, magia shamayma. Veinei malachei Elokim, and behold, another bewilderment, right? Something that is not expected. Malachei Elokim, godly angels, olim, go up, veyordim, what we questioned already, why first going up and then going down, rather than the other way around. And then it's written, bo, in it. And the question is, what does the word bo refers to? Okay, it's not clear. Let's go further. Veinei Hashem nitzav alav. Again, bewilderment. Right? And behold, Hashem, so to speak, stands on it. On what? Okay? And then Hashem speaks to him and tells him what he tells him. So we have a few questions. A, what's the meaning of the sulam? What does the sulam represent? What do the angel represent? Why would the Torah tell us that it stands on the ground and it reaches heaven? Every detail here has a meaning. Why do the angels go up and then down? And then the words bo and alav, in it and on it, what do they refer to? We'll bring a few interpretations. All of them are based on the Midrash, but elaborated. Okay? So the first two interpretations that I want to bring will be from the Malbim. And he bases it on the Midrash. There are a few pieces of information that the Midrash gives us. The Midrash tells us that there was a number to the angels. They were four. Four angels. So, why four? And what does it symbolize? That's one thing. There will be other things from the Midrash that will soon, you know, explain, but let's go stage by stage. Who is the ladder? According to this interpretation of the Malbim, the ladder is Yaakov. Yaakov is the ladder. So let's see how the ladder is described. So we'll see what does the Torah tell us about Yaakov through this dream, through this analogy. So it's a ladder that is standing on the ground but reaches heavens. Says the Malbim, because Yaakov is the one that has two elements to it, like all of us. The physical one that symbolizes by standing on the ground, and the spiritual one that can reach heavens, the neshama, the soul. Right? And what is Yaakov, the sulam? What does the sulam do? What is a ladder all about? A sulam is a connector. Right? I'm standing here, I want to be on the roof, and I can't get there. There is no connection between me and the roof. I put a ladder, and now I have a connector between me and between the roof. So Yaakov is the connector between heaven and earth. So, not speaking now about the Malbim, right? But in general, what it will mean is that every human being is supposed to create a harmony between the physical and the spiritual, connect the physical to the spiritual in a proper way. Okay? He has to elevate the physical so it will reach heaven, and then body and soul in heavens, of course not physically speaking, is really what an ideal human being is all about. Right? But the Malbim goes much further with it, and he explains as follows. He says, this shows us that Yaakov is a Merkava Lashchina, is a chariot for the divine. Now, this is a term that is mentioned a lot in Jewish books, a lot. In commentaries to Jewish philosophy books, a lot. Now, what does it mean? There are many explanations to it. I'll stick today only to what the Malbim explains in this particular case. So he says as follows. When Hashem created the world, he created it with a system that will operate it. There is a system that was created in order to operate this world. And this system is called in our language angels. Now, angels are definitely not what we have in mind, you know, when we draw them, you know, as a picture. It's spiritual powers that Hashem created in order that they will run the show. Why is it necessary? Hashem wants something that will happen in this world. Hashem has a will. Let's say he wants to give rain to the land of Israel in the right time, that will be a blessing for all the people who are there. Now, Hashem is detached from physicality, right? Hashem is a being that we don't even understand. We can't even define him as a spiritual being, right? Because all spiritual beings that we know are not Hashem, right? It's something beyond our grasp. He's totally detached from physicality. Now, he wants that something will happen on a physical level. So there is a system that was created that, so to speak, in ways that we don't know, gives a message to the system, and it goes down and down and down. There are many metamorphoses that take place till the will of Hashem expresses itself in the physical drops of water that we see in this world. Okay? And there is a whole system. And it goes through different stages. When I say different stages, it means it gets more physical, closer to physicality, closer to physicality, till we see it as rain in this world. Okay? So that's the system that operates the world. It has to start with the will of Hashem. Now, why does Hashem want one thing or not another thing? We don't know. Right? It's Hashem. He's beyond us. And that's how the system was for many, many years. In fact, for 2,000 years. For 2,000 years, Hashem wanted different things, and they came into being via this system that he created. So, there was a ladder between heaven and earth, so to speak, meaning there is a connection between Hashem and between this world. And how did it operate? Angels, or a spiritual mechanism, brought things that were in the will of Hashem in a few stages of metamorphosis into this world. That's how the Hashgacha, the divine providence, worked. In fact, there are four stages in this process. Our sages speak, and I'll say terminologies that I'm sure you heard, but I'm not going to explain it because it's not in my realm of knowledge, right? But being that we hear those things, I'll just mention the words. We recognize the fact that there are different realities, different worlds, different universes, right? And we speak about four: Bria, Amseroi, Atzilut. What is nobility? Don't ask me what this world is all about, but there is a world, a universe called the universe of nobility, that's the closest in essence to Hashem. Then there is Bria, creation, then there is Yetzira, formation, and then our world is the world of Asiya, of action. Okay? So when Hashem wants something, it, so to speak, goes through all those four worlds, meaning it becomes more and more close to physicality, till we see something happening in this world. And that's how divine providence worked for 2,000 years. I would say 2,000 years minus a few hours, the few hours of first man before the sin. Okay? Now, a new reality is starting. And this is that the one who will define what will happen in this world will be Yaakov, and after him, all of us, all of his children, forever. Meaning there is a change in divine providence starting with Yaakov. This dream tells us that Yaakov becomes the connector between heaven and earth. Up till now, it was Hashem's will and the angels. Now it's a different story. From now on, it will be different. How will it be different? Hashem will look at Yaakov. Where is he in terms of his spiritual connection to Hashem? What are his deeds? And based on this, he'll give signals to the angels to bring or not to bring things into this world. What means, in other words, nothing, but absolutely nothing, will happen in this world unless Yaakov, or today we, will initiate it. It's our connection to Hashem, to Torah, to mitzvos, to good deeds, or unfortunately at times bad deeds, that will activate the system. So who runs the show? In the first 2,000 years of mankind, Hashem by himself. Now, it's Hashem with Yaakov, based on Yaakov's decisions, based on Yaakov's choices that he makes. This is what will decide what will happen. So anything and everything that happens, not only to the Jewish nation, not only to me personally, but to all of mankind, depends on each and every one of us. Because it's the accumulation of all of our deeds and the level that we are at that will cause Hashem to give specific signals to the spiritual mechanism, and it will express itself in things that happen or don't happen in this world. Now, what's the calculation of Hashem? What does Hashem have to see in order that certain things will happen? That's beyond us. We know it only on a general level, on a national level. If all of the Jewish people do the right things, all the blessings that are written in the Torah will come upon us. If the majority of the Jewish people don't do the will of Hashem, then the curses will come upon us. But obviously it's very complex how Hashem decides it, but I don't have to know how Hashem does it. What matters to me is, it depends on me, and I have a responsibility and a privilege. I'm a partner with Hashem in running the show, and obviously it's a responsibility. Now, this was the intention of Hashem when he created the world to start with. If you will look, and that's the Malvim still, right? If you will look at the story of creation starts with inanimate things, right? Light, it's an inanimate thing. Right, heaven, earth, waters, seas, right, rivers. Then it goes to vegetation on the third day of creation. Then we have animals, right? And then we have the human being. If you look at it, it's also a ladder. But it's a ladder that starts from the bottom and goes to the top. right? The intention of Hashem was originally that he will bring down an abundance. Men will use this abundance, if it's an animate vegetation or animals or energy, light, right? In order to connect all of creation and bring it back to Hashem. So creation is going down a ladder from the will of Hashem to the physical. The purpose of man was to take all that was created in this physical world and elevate it and come back to where, so to speak, Hashem is standing. Hashem is on the top of the ladder. You have to connect all of creation back to Hashem. But as we know, from the sin of first man till Avram Avinu, till Abraham, people did not do it. They detached themselves from Hashem. Right? But with Abraham, a new process is starting, and it's formulated now. Now it's finalized. Hashem tells Yaakov, from now on, there is a gene ladder between heaven and earth, and you are in charge of connecting heaven and earth, meaning everything that will come from heaven will come via you. If we understand it, we can go back to the psukim, to the verses, and see how it answers all the difficulties that we had. So, he had a dream that a ladder is standing, its legs are on the ground, and its head is in Shamayim. So the ladder is Yaakov. And Yaakov has two aspects, body and soul, and he connects them. Now, the angels of Hashem from now on are first going down to see Yaakov. And how is he holding in his relationship to Hashem? And obviously when we speak about Yaakov, it's Yaakov and all his children, the Jewish nation. In fact, the Midrash says that Yaakov was so perfect in this mission that the angels, when they saw him asleep, they saw a godly being that reminded them of the image of man that is on the in the heavenly chariot, in the heavenly Merkava, of Kisei HaKavod, of the heavenly throne. And they went up and down to compare. And they saw that it's identical. And they were bewildered, and that's why the Hinei. How could a human being who has a body reach such a level? You remember what the angels, we all remember what they said when Hashem wanted to create the world. Why to create the world and give room for sin and for a detachment from Hashem? That's a chilul Hashem, a desecration of the name of Hashem. Now they see the answer for such a Yaakov. Obviously, it's worthwhile. So they go down and up to compare. So Yaakov is perfect in this mission. And that's why the angels are going down and then up. Bo, in it, up and then down, I'm sorry. Bo, in it. If you see, the Torah doesn't say on the ladder. The Torah says bo. Not on, but in. And the Torah doesn't specify in what. Says the Malbim, it's both. It's in it and in him. On it and in him. Meaning, in terms of the abundance that comes from Shamayim, it's on the ladder, as we explained. Four stages between one reality to the other, right from one reality to the other, till it comes to the physical format of it in this world. But in terms of the signals that goes up, the angels are going inside Yaakov. Meaning there is godliness that is developed inside Yaakov. And this brings godliness down in what is described as a ladder from one reality to another till it comes to this world. Okay, so the word bo is written in this way, in this ambiguous way, in order to give us those two interpretations. And the Midrash says it. The Midrash says bo be Yaakov, bo basulam. It's interpreted in the same way. And the same way with the next one. Hashem is standing on top of what? on top of the ladder and on top of Yaakov. Meaning Yaakov is the place of godliness. Yaakov is the place where Hashem dwells. And to the extent that Hashem is in Yaakov, we will have an abundance in this world. So it's a change in the nature of this world. Now it's Yaakov. But at the giving of the Torah, it became the Jewish nation as a whole, and that's how it is till today. And this is what Chazal say, everything that happens, happens because of Yaakov. Right? Any political change, any physical change, anything that happens in this world is because of us and for us. Okay? So that's one interpretation of the dream according to the Malbim. He gives another unbelievable interpretation that says as follows. What does it mean Hashem stands on top of the ladder? Can we speak about a location when we speak about Hashem? Hashem is all over. What does it mean? Hashem stands on top of the ladder. So he says as follows. He says, the Midrash says the following. I'm quoting the Midrash. Ve'inei Hashem nitzav alav. Behold, Hashem is standing on top of the ladder. Or of him. Says the Midrash. Hashem gives space, gives room for this world. Meaning Hashem creates space for creatures. But Ein HaOlam Mekomo, but the world is not the place of Hashem. Hashem doesn't have a specific place. He's not limited to a location. He's all over. So what does it mean? Hashem nitzav alav, Hashem stands on him. So the Midrash says the following, and it's a difficult thing to understand. The Malbim will explain it. The Midrash says, Rak ha-tzadikim, only the righteous people, Elokim mitkayem alehem. Hashem is, so to speak, with them. If we can speak about location, so to speak, it's only in reference to Hashem vis-a-vis the righteous. What does it mean? So he explains as follows. When Hashem created the world, in the very, very beginning, Hashem was very, very obvious. The reality of Adam and Chava before the sin was the reality of Ve'italachti betochechem. Hashem walked, so to speak, with Adam and Chava in the garden, like we take a walk with a friend. And that's a quotation of Rashi when he speaks about the times of Mashiach, when we'll come back to this reality. Okay? Meaning in other words, what it says in other words is that Hashem was so obvious that you like saw him as if he's standing in front of you. But after the sin, the reality changed. Hashem became hidden. It was difficult to see him. Not impossible though. If it's impossible, we cannot be asked to see him, right? But it became difficult to see him. What was the way to see Hashem at that stage? If a person did want to come to a clarity about the existence of Hashem, where did he have to go? To look into creation. Right? You look at creation, you see the sophistication, you see the beauty, you see the harmony, you see the wisdom, you see the complexity, you see Hashem. Right? And not only what exists, but also how it operates, the laws of nature, right, are mind-boggling, right? Their precision, their complexity, the fact that they don't contradict each other, that there is a harmony between all the laws of nature, all of it was a window that via it, people could see Hashem. But on the other hand, the physical reality and the fact that there is cause and effect, laws of nature, could also create the illusion that it's something that functions on its own. And as we know, with time, in the first 2,000 years of history, slowly, slowly, people did not see Hashem and attributed everything that happens to different powers, different gods, and to themselves. I'm successful because I worked hard, because I'm talented, because I'm capable, because I have a connection, whatever it will be. But Hashem was out of the picture. It changed with Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, Chazal say, and I'm quoting again from the Midrash, okay, that Avraham Avinu saw creation, and he saw it as it is, as if it is on fire, meaning it's self-destructive. It's detached from the source. People don't see Hashem. Fire symbolizes destruction, right? It's not connected to the source. So he asked, could it be? I'm sorry, could it possibly be that there is a Bira, meaning a beautiful big city, a capital, and there is no leader to the capital? So it's written that Hashem revealed himself to him and said, I am the leader of this capital. Okay? And this started a whole new direction, not only for Avraham as an individual, but with him, a process of bringing Hashem back to the picture started. As we know, Avraham spread the name of Hashem, the knowledge about his existence, the knowledge about his kindness, about the fact that he wants a relationship with human beings, to many, many, many people. And it happened in two ways. A, by actions that he made, his open home and the hospitality and the discussions that were around the table. That's one thing. And second, by seeing Avraham and who he was, it was obvious to people that that's a godly creature. And there was another way, by seeing how Hashem deals with Avraham, the miracles that happened to Avraham, from the first story of surviving the burning furnace, right, till all the other miracles, having Yitzchak at the age of 100, and so on, and so on, and so on. People saw and knew Hashem via Avraham Avinu. Now, this is really what Hashem tells Yaakov, according to the other interpretation in the Malbim, to the second interpretation in the Malbim, via this story. And it's beautiful. He says as follows. He had a dream, back to verse number 12, to the dream. He had a dream, and behold, there was a ladder that connected heaven and earth. What is this ladder that connected heaven and earth? Again, it's Yaakov, and later on his children. How does it connect heaven and earth? Because Hashem, so to speak, stands upon him. We said Hashem cannot be limited into a location, obviously, right? What does it mean Hashem nitzav alav? What it means is that godliness, and that's the explanation of the Midrash that we said, that godliness dwells in within the soul of a righteous person. Meaning, a righteous person has Hashem inside him. We all of Klal Yisrael have a spark of it in us, right? The Tzelem Elokim that is unique to Klal Yisrael. But the more we develop our relationship with Hashem, the more Hashem enters us. Our soul, our neshome is illuminated by more and more and more godliness. So we are a connector of heaven and earth. Hashem, so to speak, comes down to this world to dwell in within us. And Hashem tells him, I am Hashem, the God of your father Abraham. That's when the process started. The God of Yitzchak. The land that you lay upon, I'll give it to you and to your children. And you know why? Because you, via your connection to me, give existence to the world. You become like me. We said, Hashem doesn't have a location. He creates a location. He gives a place to each and every one of us. He gives a place to creation as a whole. Right? Now Yaakov is doing it. Yaakov gives existence to reality via his deeds, meaning he creates space. Because if not of Yaakov, the space would not exist. All of earth would go back to nothingness. So the same way that Hashem is mekomo shel olam, that Hashem gives space, now he has a partner in doing it, and this is Yaakov. Now Yaakov gives existence to reality by the way, in what way? By doing what Avraham started, bringing Hashem into himself. Okay? And that's why else is Eve. That's why it will be given to him. Now, more than this, later on, there is a promise, I'll be with you, I'll protect you, I'll bring you back to this land, I'll never depart from you, because you are the connector between me and the world. If you are not there, if I do not protect you, there is no purpose to creation. Then creation can go back to nothingness. And that's why Hashem says, I'll be with you. All along, I'll protect you, you must be here. If you are not here, there is no ladder that connects, and then there is no reason for the whole thing. Concludes the Malbim in an unbelievable way, and he says the following. He says, from creation, from after the sin, till Abraham, if a person wanted to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he had to look into nature, he had to look into the laws of nature. From now on, he has to look at the righteous people. He has to look at Abraham, at Yitzchak, at Yaakov, at righteous Jewish people, and he'll know there is a God. I once was told by a student of mine that was already teaching other people and brings them close to Yiddishkeit. She said the following. She says, when I speak to my student and they ask me, how do you know all of it is true? So she says, you have to look at one, just one, righteous Jewish person. And then you know it all. And that's basically what the Malbim says. When you see a person who is godly, you know what it is all about. And in fact, the real proof in this world of Hashem is Klal Yisrael, is the Jewish nation. And the Torah itself says it. Atem Edai is written in Dvorim. You are my witnesses. What does it mean, you are my witnesses? It's not because we know to tell the story. It's because we are the story. We are supposed to be the ladder. Meaning, when people see us, they should see Hashem. That's Ve'inei Hashem Yitzav Alav. That there is one place where Hashem is, of course not geographically, and this is the souls of righteous people. So Malachi Elokim Olim V'Yordim Bo in Yaakov. Yaakov becomes the connector between heaven and earth. By seeing him, you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is taking place with the creation of the Jewish people. We are supposed to be those that when you see us, hopefully we are on the level that people see Hashem. Okay? So these are the two beautiful, beautiful explanations of the Malbim. There is a third explanation of the Malbim, but I won't go with it. I want to go with it on a broader level. Maybe if we have time in the end, I'll connect it to the third explanation of the Malbim. There is a very, very famous midrash that I'm sure you have heard in the past that refers to the fact that there are four angels who go up and down the ladder. And the midrash elaborates and tells us who those angels are, and how high did everyone go, when did they go down, and the Midrash explains it. It's a famous Midrash. Amar Rabbi Shmuel ve-Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Reb Nachman, says, Ve'inei malachei Elokim olim ve-yordim bo. And behold, angels, godly angels go up and down. Who are they? So the Midrash says, these are the angels, the sarim, of the nations that worship other gods. Meaning there were four angels that went up, who symbolize four angels that are a symbol of, or the source of the spiritual power of four nations. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Yaakov, the angel of Bavel, meaning the spiritual essence of Bavel, going up 70 runs, you say, runs on the ladder, and then going down. Obviously symbolizes the 70 years that the Jewish people were under the authority of Babel in Babylonian exile, and then it was over. Then he showed him another angel, the angel that is the source of what Madai is all about. Madai, Paras, the story of Purim, right? And he saw this angel going up 52 stages on the ladder, because this was the time that they were in power, and then going down. And then he saw the Greek angel going up, and in this midrash it's written 100 stages. I saw somewhere else 180, and I don't know why the difference is and to which periods of time they refer. But anyhow, 100 stages and going down. And then he saw the angel of Edom, of our exile, going up, and he didn't see how far he goes up. And he didn't see him going down. באותה שעה נתיירא יעקב אבינו. At that time, יעקב אבינו was very scared. And he said, שמה לזה אין לו ירידה? Is it so that this angel will not come down? Meaning, does this mean this exile is supposed to be an exile forever? So, Hashem told him, ואתה אל תירא עבדי יעקב. It's a quotation from ירמיהו. You should not be afraid, יעקב. ואל תחת ישראל, you don't have to worry, Israel. Why? כביכול אפילו אתה רואהו עולה ויושב אצלי. Even if you'll see him going so high that he'll sit next to me. Meaning as high as could be, right? משם אני מורידו. I'll bring him down from there. Even from there, I'll bring him down. You shouldn't worry. As it's written in Ovadia, אם תגביע כנשר, if you'll soar as high as the eagle, which soars higher than any other flying animal, ואם בין כוכבים שמקינך, even if you will put your nest among the stars, משם אורידך נאום השם. From there, I'll put you down, says השם. השם swears. Now, what does it mean? Obviously, it tells us future Jewish history. Yaakov is going out to exile, right, to the first exile, and he's not just an individual going into exile. He symbolizes Jewish history, and not only symbolizes Jewish history, but he prepares the ground for us. He paves the path. By him dealing with the difficulties of this time, of this exile that he goes through, he creates the spiritual genes that we will need in order to deal with our exile. And if, or exiles, and if not of him doing it, we would have not been able to do it. Meaning, if we would have not have the root of Yaakov, the DNA of Yaakov, we would have not been on the level to be under the circumstances that we are at and remain loyal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and remain the nation of Hashem. Would have not been possible. And even physically, we would have not been able to survive. Because obviously, there is a connection between the spirit and the body. But why are we given all the details? Right? So, first, Yaakov is given the information in order that he'll prepare the ground. And there are four stages that differ from each other. And each one needs a different preparation, different type of strengths. And Yaakov is preparing for all of them. Now, what is the strength of each and every one of them? And why are they divided between three exiles that are relatively short, 70 years, 52 years, 180 years, and one that is closed already to 2,000 years and is not yet over? And it comes to a point where we think, when is it going to be over? Is it going to really be over? Right? Of course, we believe in all the prophecies, but based on what we see, it's hard to see that it's going to be over. Because it's not a matter of belief or faith. Of course, we believe in everything that Hashem said will happen. But we understand that exiles are not just a physical reality. Meaning, it's not just that the Jewish people lost for a time being the land of Israel, and they are in a different country and suffer and don't have the control over their own reality. That's one aspect of it. But that's only an expression of something on the spiritual level. And we understand that in order to come back from exile, we don't need just political changes, but we need spiritual changes. And when we look at ourselves today and we compare ourselves to previous generations, we are bewildered. Can we really bring Mashiach if the generation of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai didn't bring it? Right? Or even if the generation before the war didn't bring Mashiach. The change is so radical, can we bring him? Right? So, obviously, Yaakov is afraid. What's going to happen?
So we have to explain what's the difference
between the first three exiles and the exiles that we are part of. Because in order to bring it to the happy end, we have to know the nature of what we are part of, right, and make it happen. And most probably that's the reason why we are given this information, to understand what are our challenges and what has to be done. So what I'm explaining now is based on a fascinating Ma'amar article by Arav Dessler in his Michtav Meliyahu, the third part, and it's called Galut and Geula, Exile and Redemption. I'll bring just a fraction of what he says because it's a Chumash class and not a general topic, you know, that I'm discussing. I'll stick to whatever is here, right? But I really recommend reading it because it goes through from first man till Mashiach and gives an insight into mankind's history that is fascinating. Okay? I'll not bring many of the details, many of the ideas, just the main premise of this article. So he says as follows. He says, there are two types of challenges. One type of challenges that comes from physical desires. That's one category. The first three exiles, the challenges that we faced came from physical desires. Let's take the time of the first temple, before the first exile, and we'll take just one example. Before the first exile, what were the sins that caused the destruction? Our sages tell us. They tell us it was idol worship. It was a murder, of course on a very small scale, fine points, but still in this category, and immorality. He says, if we, and Shemitah, not keeping Shemitah properly. These are the four things that are given as the reason for the first exile. The exile in Babel. When we look into those and try to see what's the root, where did it come from, why did we do it? So why does one person kill another person? He's angry at him, jealous of him, hates him. These are usually the reasons. Why? If you think about it, it's because something that this person does or has is perceived in the eyes of the murderer as being taken away from him on his account. Right? Either you think this territory is mine and you are there. That's the first murder, Cain and Abel. Right? Either any area, right? The money that this person has, I think is mine, and he doesn't want to give it to me. Or I just feel that it should be mine, even if I have nothing to do with him. And people kill for it. Right? Whatever it will be. But murder comes from physical desires. I have a desire for something, and I feel that the other person is the obstacle in my way for this thing. That's murder. So it comes from physical desires. Immorality, of course, is physical desires. What about idol worshipping? Our sages tell us something very fascinating. When you speak to people who don't believe in what they're supposed to believe, don't believe in Hashem, don't believe in Torah, and you'll ask them, why don't you believe? They'll come up with endless philosophical arguments and questions. Right? So we think these people are really thinking and they have problems. Chazal tell us, a person never thinks unless he wants to think. Think about it. If I'll get a newspaper, the two-thirds of it will be sports. Especially in America, and I don't know even the rules of the games. Right? The first thing I'll do, I'll take this section and put it in the garbage. I won't think about it. I won't read it. I won't bring it to my brain altogether because I have no interest. Okay? When I was 18 and it was the time of my friends getting engaged, the first thing I looked to in the newspaper was who got engaged today. Right? We look at what interests us. What doesn't interest us, if economy is not what I'm good at, I don't read this section in the newspaper. And so on and so on. Meaning what comes to the brain is what we want. Our sages say the Jewish people did not worship idols only because via creating a new philosophy, they got justification to fulfill desires that the Torah forbade. Lo avdu Israel avodah zarah, ela leatir lahem arayot beferestia. That's what Chazal said. Meaning, The first temple was destroyed because Jewish people succumbed on their high level to physical desires. Now, when Hashem punishes, it's in order to give an opportunity to correct what went wrong. It's not in order to punish. Hashem doesn't have to get even. He's not affected by what we do. The punishment is a way that a loving father changes the reality so his child could go back to where he's supposed to be. Right? So what does Hashem do? He sends us into exile. Why is this exactly the punishment? Because Hashem chooses a nation that being in its midst will bring us back, or will have the potential. Of course, we have the choice if to do it or not, but it will give us the option, it will give us the help we need in order to correct it. So what does he do? Interestingly enough, the opposite of what I would say. Not that we need the, you know, proofs to the fact that we don't understand vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's fascinating sometimes to be struck by it, right? I would say the exact opposite, see the godly wisdom, right? What Hashem does is he sends us to a nation that is indulged in physical desires, but indulged to that extent that we feel that it's disgusting. And then we reflect upon ourselves and say, I don't want to be there. Let me correct where I am wrong in this area. Okay, so that's what exile is all about. And Rav Dessler says, all three first exiles came from a desire, a physical desire that the Jewish people wanted to be involved in, on their high level. And that's why Hashem sent them into nations, that there they had the opportunity to see how destructive it is. Took time, 70 years, 52 years, 108 years, they corrected it and they were redeemed. Now, why did it take a short time? Because we all know that when it comes to physical desires, as much as we desire it, and as much as we think it will make us happy, the moment we indulge, we get disgusted by it. You see the best food. You want to eat it, you can't wait. And you eat it and you enjoy it till you overeat. And if you overeat enough, you can't see this type of food anymore. Right? And that's true in any physical desire. It has a limit. You can't go further. You can't eat five times a day. Full meals. We eat more than five times a day, but full meals, right? We can't. We have a certain capacity, and beyond this, it feels not good. And this is the way to correct it. But there is a difference between those exiles and the last one. The last one is something that the solution for it is not so simple. What is a Sav? What is a Dom? What is the nation that we are under its exile today? A Dom is about power. What a Dom wants is to conquer the world, to be in charge, to have all the power in the world, in whatever way. If they want money, it's not so much for the physical desire, but having resources gives you power and the ability to rule. What is basically what plays today. The nation that has the strongest economy is the nation that has the most to say in the world. When we speak today about the possible downfall of America, we say it in lieu of the fact that China becomes and India becomes an economical power that might overshadow America. Right? So it's all about power. The whole concept of two blocks, as we had it in our generation, to a certain extent it's over between the East and the West, was about conquering the world. Right? Islam today, all they want is that the whole world will be like them. Right? It's not about territory. It's about power. I want to have the power. I want everybody to be under me and like me. Right? Now, there is no point when a person says, I have enough power, I'm fed up. Never. The ego can soar till heaven. Let's see what is the pasuk. Right? Im takbiyak hanesher, if he'll soar as high as the eagle, And in vain kochavim simkinecha, if you'll put your nest among the stars, and we can understand it even literally. Is there a reason to go to the stars and spend so much money and energy and effort on it? Then there are hungry people here on earth. Only the desire for power does it. It has nothing to do with the physical desire. If I am up on the moon first, I am more powerful. What did it contribute to mankind vis-a-vis the investment? Very poorly. But it's a pursuit of power and it has no end. We got already to the moon. Now we want to be at the Mars. And so on and so on and so on. And how does Hashem say in the Midrash, even if you'll come as high as me, you'll sit next to me. Right? It's possible. Meaning man puts himself to be a god, right? And he wants to be god. And it means unlimited. The more you get, the more you want. And it has no limit. And being that this is the case, on a physical level, it's frightening. How will it end? We don't have today the Babylonians. It was self-destructive because they indulged in physical desires. We don't have the Greeks. We don't have the Persians. They self-destroy themselves. But it seems that the pursuit of power is not self-destructive. You can go higher and higher and higher and higher. So what will be? Now, the same question applies on the spiritual level. What caused the second destruction? Hatred in vain. It's not about the physical desires. Why do I hate you? Because your existence takes away from my power. Not about something you have. Something I want that you possess and you don't let me have. Nothing to do with it. Just the desire for power. It's putting man as a god. How will this end? The more I get, the more I want. Hatred in vain. This is what caused it. And obviously, what needs to be done is unity. Giving the other person the place I want to have. In order to be able to do it, I have to bring Hashem into the picture. Because if I am God, I have no room for anybody else. If Hashem is God, then what gives me my existence? My godliness. Every one of us has godliness. So we are all equals. And it's not about power and about going high and high and high. But as we all know, it's not so simple to resolve this problem. Here we are, almost 2,000 years later, are we more united than we were in the past? And that's what worries us and makes us ask, so how will Mashiach come? What does the Midrash answer? I'll bring him down. So does this mean that we are not able to do what we need to do? Hashem will do it? So why are we going through the exile if not in order for us to be able to learn and accomplish? Right? What's the point? All of exile, all the suffering is so we will bring the world to purpose. But if it seems that we are more divided today, or at least the same division is here today as it always was, right? So what's the point? But Hashem won't bring Esav down. Hashem won't bring unity upon us without our involvement. What will be our involvement? Explains Rav Dessler so beautifully. When mankind will see that on the technical level, on the physical level, they are almost like God. You are among the stars. You have a presence among the stars. You are as high as the eagle. You drive your car and somebody from above tells you exactly where you are and how to move and knows every change you made. It's fascinating. We don't think about it because we get so used to it. But we are almost like God. Right? The whole concept of a godly eye, a godly ear is so clear today. We don't always take it this way, but aren't we heard and seen? Wherever we are, you can't escape. And everybody sees you and everybody knows you. If you want it and if you don't want it. You ever use the computer, the whole world knows about you. And everything that was done there and so on and so on, right? So it seems that we are like God. But when we look at the state of men in this reality, are our lives happier in any ways than previous generations? Then we come to the conclusion that we are not God. This realization will bring us to embrace a solution.
the more we see the devastation, the more we are ready to embrace a solution. If we are ready to embrace a solution, we are ready for Mashiach. Meaning the disappointment from ourselves and our capabilities without Hashem is what will bring Mashiach. So when Hashem will bring him down, it will be via us. Meaning in this way, Yaakov is also the ladder. We are those who are supposed to say, but see, if you don't have spirituality, if you don't have a kesher to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you're not connected to Hashem, what's the usage of all of it? It's only self-destructive. When we understand this, Mashiach will come, and this will be our doing. Because through this process of 2,000 years, it will be so clear to us that the only thing we want is a connection to Hashem. And then Hashem will grant it to us.